Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey, Herman and Corin, my favorite virtual sloth and donkey podcast host pair on the internet, although I think the list of those is probably pretty small. I want to ask you guys today another question about the fascinating mathematics that underpins so much of the technology that we rely upon today. We talked in our last episode about the importance of checksums, a very interesting, albeit kind of complicated topic about how we can use relatively small numbers calculated from an extremely long set of underlying binary data to attest that it's the same thing. And we talked about the different algorithms a little bit as well for calculating checksums. Another technology that is really amazing is error correction code, or ECC. I came across ECC through my various weird things that I've kind of been into at various points of my journey with technology. The first time actually was recently when doing my home inventory project, which has been an ongoing thing for a number of years now. And I was printing out my QR codes, and then I saw on the label printer, you have these settings for the percentage of ECC that you want to use. You can use none at all, or you can use more. If you use more, the QR code is physically bigger and takes up more space. You have to get a bigger tape size. But the utility and the significance of it is that if you think about a barcode that has to be decoded by a scanner, and your average barcode sitting on the shelf in a supermarket, or a barcode that's wrapped around your luggage and goes onto one of those conveyor belts in airports and gets bashed all over the place, you're never going to have a pristine barcode unless it's just come out of the printer. So pretty much from the moment that they are created, they're going to be scraped, abraded, and that's going to degrade the ability to decode them. But that's expected. That's not really an error. So ECC provides a bit of buffer for that process and makes them readable even when they're in the degraded and scratched up state. And the more you have of it, the more robust they are. Another really interesting use is optical media, where the same thing really, if you think about, I guess, putting a CD in a glove compartment of your car, and back in the days of optical media, of course, although it still has a use case in archival. And likewise, there's an expectation that they're going to be various degrees of scratched, and ECC, again, plays a very significant role in making those technologies not so that the first time you put it in the player, you can't play anything. But I suspect that there is a vast amount of other uses for ECC that are probably much more relevant to the technology we engage with every day. I'd love to hear about the history. I think like AI and like the QR code is actually quite old itself. So much of this technology that we kind of take for granted as part of the new tech we have today is actually a lot older than we think. And that's because it's taken generations of work for it to come to fruition, which is, I think, testament to how much technology is built upon the work of not only previous other companies and other people today, but sometimes really people that lived generations ago. So Herman and Corin, love to hear about error correction code. What is it? How do the mathematics make it work? And what other applications does it have besides in inventory labels and in optical media? Over to you guys.
Hey everyone, welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Corin, and I am sitting here in our living room in Jerusalem with my brother.
Herman Poppleberry, reporting for duty. It is a beautiful day to dive into some math, Corin.
It really is. And we have a great starting point today. Our housemate Daniel was actually working on a home inventory project this week. He was printing out these little QR codes to stick on boxes, and he noticed something in the settings. There is an option for the level of error correction. He sent us a prompt asking about the history and the math behind error correction code, or ECC, especially since we just finished talking about checksums in episode 235.
I love that Daniel noticed that. It is one of those things that is hidden in plain sight. Most people just scan a QR code and it works, but the reason it works even if the sticker is half peeled or covered in grease is because of ECC. It is fundamentally different from the checksums we discussed last week.
Right. If you remember from our last episode, a checksum is like a receipt. It tells you if the bag of groceries you bought is the same one you started with. If a single item is missing, the checksum changes, and you know there is an error. But the checksum itself cannot tell you which item is missing or how to put it back.
Exactly. Checksums are for error detection. ECC is for error recovery. It is the difference between saying, hey, something is broken, and saying, something is broken, and here is exactly how to fix it without needing to ask for the data again.
That is the magic of it. In a QR code, you can literally scratch out a significant chunk of the squares, and your phone can still read the original URL. So, Herman, where did this start? This feels like something that would have come out of the early computing era.
It did. We have to go back to Bell Labs in the late 1940s. Specifically, we have to talk about Richard Hamming. He was a mathematician working on the early relay computers, like the Bell Model 5. Back then, data was fed in using punched paper tape or cards. The machines were incredibly finicky. A relay might stick, or a hole might not be punched quite right, and the whole calculation would crash.
I imagine that was incredibly frustrating. You spend hours setting up a run, and one tiny physical glitch ruins everything.
It drove Hamming crazy. He famously said, if the machine can tell when an error has occurred, surely there is a way to tell where the error is so that the machine can correct it itself. He got tired of coming in on the weekends only to find that his programs had aborted because of a single bit error. So, in 1950, he published a landmark paper introducing what we now call Hamming codes.
1950. That is 76 years ago today. And we are still using his logic. What was his fundamental breakthrough?
It was the concept of redundancy, but structured redundancy. Before Hamming, the only way people thought about error correction was simple repetition. If I want to send you a zero, I send 000. If you receive 010, you assume the one is an error and go with the majority. But that is incredibly inefficient. You are tripling the amount of data you send just to fix one error.
Right. And if you get two errors, you are totally stuck. You would think the zero was a one.
Exactly. Hamming realized you could use parity bits in a much smarter way. He developed a system where you interleave these parity bits so that each one covers a different overlapping subset of the data bits. It is almost like a Sudoku puzzle. By looking at which parity bits failed, you can triangulate the exact position of the flipped bit. If bit number 5 is wrong, a specific combination of parity checks will fail that points directly to bit 5.
That is brilliant! It is like a coordinate system for errors. But Hamming codes are mostly for fixing a single bit, right? If I have a scratched CD or a damaged QR code, we're talking about losing whole blocks of data, not just one bit.
You are hitting on the next big evolution. While Hamming was working on bit-level errors, other giants were looking at the bigger picture. Claude Shannon, the father of information theory, proved mathematically that you could transmit data with zero errors over a noisy channel, as long as you stayed below the channel capacity. But he did not actually say how to do it, he just proved it was possible.
He gave us the goal, but not the map.
Precisely. The map came in 1960 from two men named Irving Reed and Gustav Solomon. They were working at Lincoln Laboratory at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. They developed what we now call Reed-Solomon codes. And Korn, this is the math that makes Daniel's QR codes and your old music CDs work.
I have heard the name Reed-Solomon before. It comes up in everything from deep space probes to satellite television. How does it differ from the Hamming approach?
Reed-Solomon codes move away from individual bits and start treating data as blocks or symbols. They use the mathematics of finite fields, specifically Galois fields. Now, I know that sounds heavy, but think of it like this. Instead of just checking if a number is even or odd, they treat the data as coefficients of a polynomial.
Okay, let me try to wrap my head around that. A polynomial is something like x squared plus 5x plus 6, right?
Exactly. Imagine your data is a set of points. If you have 2 points, you can draw a unique line through them. If you have 3 points, you can draw a unique parabola through them. Reed-Solomon takes your data points and finds a specific polynomial that passes through all of them. Then it sends extra points that are also on that same curve.
So if I receive 10 points, but 3 of them are wrong or missing, I can still use the remaining 7 to reconstruct the original curve.
You nailed it. As long as you have enough valid points to define the polynomial, the wrong points will stand out because they are not on the curve. You can ignore the outliers and solve for the original data. This is why a QR code can be missing 30% of its area and still scan perfectly. The math is literally reconstructing the missing pieces of the puzzle based on the geometric properties of the data that survived.
That is a much more robust way of thinking about it than just flipping a bit back and forth. It is almost like the data has a physical shape in a mathematical space, and even if you chip away parts of that shape, the underlying structure is still recognizable.
That is a great analogy. It is a high-dimensional geometric structure. And the beauty of Reed-Solomon is that it is incredibly good at handling burst errors. In the real world, errors do not usually happen one bit at a time. A scratch on a disk or a smudge on a label ruins a whole physical neighborhood of data. Because Reed-Solomon works on blocks, it does not care if the error is 1 bit or 8 bits in a row. It just sees it as one corrupted symbol.
So, Hamming is like a surgical tool for tiny glitches, and Reed-Solomon is the heavy machinery for physical damage.
Exactly. And the applications are everywhere. Daniel mentioned optical media. When you play a Blu-ray or a CD, the laser is constantly hitting imperfections, dust, or tiny scratches. Without Reed-Solomon, the audio would pop and click constantly, or the video would just freeze. The player is doing heavy-duty math in real time to fix those errors before the data even reaches the decoder.
It makes me think about how much we rely on this without knowing it. Like, what about our cell phones? When I am walking between tall buildings here in Jerusalem, my signal is bouncing off walls, getting interference from other devices. Is ECC happening there too?
Constantly. Wireless communication is incredibly noisy. We use even more advanced versions there, like turbo codes or polar codes. These are the things that make 4G and 5G possible. They allow us to squeeze every bit of capacity out of the airwaves. If we did not have ECC, we would need much stronger transmitters and we would have much slower speeds because we would be constantly resending dropped packets.
You mentioned something earlier about deep space. That has to be the ultimate test for this stuff.
It really is. Think about the Voyager probes. Voyager 1 is currently over 15 billion miles away, well past the edge of our solar system. Its transmitter is about as powerful as a 20-watt light bulb. By the time that signal reaches Earth, it is incredibly faint, buried under cosmic background radiation and noise.
How do we get those crisp images of Jupiter or Saturn back from a refrigerator light bulb from 15 billion miles away?
It is all ECC. NASA uses concatenated codes. They might use a Reed-Solomon code on the outside, and a Viterbi or convolutional code on the inside. It is layers of protection. They basically bake so much mathematical redundancy into the signal that even if half of the signal is lost to noise by the time it reaches our big satellite dishes, the computers can piece the image back together perfectly. In fact, Voyager 1 is so far away now that it takes nearly 24 hours for its signal to reach us. Later this year, in November 2026, it will actually cross the milestone of being one full light day away from Earth.
It is amazing that math done with pencil and paper back then is what allows us to see the edge of the solar system today. But let's bring it back down to Earth for a second. What about our computers? I have heard people talk about ECC-RAM, especially in servers. Why do we need error correction for memory inside a sealed computer box?
This is a fascinating one. Most consumer laptops and desktops use non-ECC-RAM. It is cheaper and slightly faster. But in servers or workstations where reliability is everything, we use ECC-RAM. The reason is actually quite wild: cosmic rays.
Wait, really? Space radiation is flipping bits in my computer.
Yes. High energy particles from space or even trace radioactive elements in the packaging of the chips themselves can strike a transistor in your memory chip and flip a 0 to a 1. It is called a single event upset. In a normal computer, this might cause a random crash or a blue screen of death, or maybe just a single wrong pixel in a photo you are editing.
But in a server running a bank's database or a hospital's records, that could be catastrophic.
Exactly. If a bit flips in a financial transaction, you might suddenly have an extra 0 in your bank balance, or worse, a 0 missing. ECC-RAM adds an extra chip to the memory module. Every time data is written, it calculates a Hamming-style code. When the data is read back, the hardware checks the code. If a bit has flipped due to a cosmic ray or a hardware glitch, the memory controller fixes it on the fly.
So my computer is basically fighting a constant battle against the universe just to keep my data straight.
It really is. And as we make transistors smaller and smaller to pack more memory into the same space, they become even more sensitive to these upsets. This is why error correction is becoming more important, not less. Even modern consumer-grade memory like DDR5 now has something called on-die ECC.
Wait, so does that mean my new laptop has the same protection as a server?
Not quite. On-die ECC in DDR5 is mostly there to help the manufacturers. Because the chips are so dense, they have more defects. The chip fixes its own internal errors so it can pass quality control, but it does not protect the data as it travels across the wires to your CPU. For that, you still need true sideband ECC RAM, which has that extra ninth chip on the stick to watch the whole path.
That is an interesting distinction. It is like the difference between a car that can fix its own engine and a car that has a full security detail for the entire trip.
That is a great way to put it. As we push the boundaries of physics, we have to use more math to compensate for the instability of the hardware. It is much cheaper and more scalable to use a smart algorithm than to try to build a perfectly shielded, perfectly reliable physical device.
So, for Daniel's inventory project, when he chooses a higher level of ECC for his QR codes, he's basically deciding how much noise or damage he expects those labels to take in the real world.
Exactly. QR codes have four standard levels, L, M, Q, and H. Level L can recover about 7% of the data. Level M is 15%, which is what most people use. Level Q is 25%, and level H for high can recover a massive 30%. If Daniel is sticking them on boxes in a clean, climate-controlled room, he can go with level L and have a smaller, cleaner-looking code. But if he is putting them on outdoor equipment or boxes that will be dragged across a garage floor, he should crank it up to level H. It makes the code larger and denser because of the extra redundancy, but it means that even if a big chunk of the sticker gets torn off, he can still scan it.
It is a trade-off between space and reliability. That seems to be the universal law of ECC.
It is. Information theory is all about trade-offs. You can have more speed, or more reliability, or less bandwidth, but you cannot have all three at the maximum. ECC is the tool we use to balance those scales.
I want to go back to the math for a moment, because I think our listeners would appreciate a bit more depth on how those polynomials actually work. You mentioned Galois fields. Why do we need a special kind of field? Why can't we just use regular old algebra?
That is a great question, Korn. In regular algebra, when you multiply two numbers, they can get very large. If you are dealing with computer data, which is all bits and bytes, you need the results of your math to stay within a certain range. You cannot have a result that is 11.5 when you only have 8 bits to store it.
Right. You need it to fit back into the box.
Exactly. A Galois field is a finite set of numbers where you can do addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. And the result is always another number in that same set. For an 8-bit system, we use a field with 256 elements. It is like clock arithmetic, where 12 plus 1 is 1. It keeps everything contained. This allows the ECC algorithms to perform complex polynomial division and multiplication without ever overflowing the memory or losing precision
So it is a self-contained mathematical universe where the rules are designed specifically for the constraints of binary data.
Precisely. And the magic of Reed-Solomon is finding the roots of these polynomials. When you scan a QR code, your phone is essentially solving a system of equations. If some of the data is missing, those become the unknowns in the equation. Because of the way the redundancy was added, the computer can solve for those unknowns and recover the original values.
It is like a detective solving a mystery. You have some clues, some missing evidence, and you use the laws of logic to fill in the gaps.
That is a perfect way to put it. And there are even more modern codes now, like low-density parity, check codes, or LDPC. These are used in almost all modern hard drives and solid-state drives, or SSDs. As the bits on a spinning platter or a flash chip get smaller and smaller, the chance of a read error goes up. LDPC uses a massive graph-based approach to iteratively guess and check the data until it converges on the correct answer.
Iteratively? So it is not just one calculation. It is like a conversation between the data and the checker.
Yes, it is a bit like a group of people trying to remember a song. One person remembers a line, another remembers the melody, and they keep talking until they all agree on the whole thing. It is incredibly efficient and allows us to push the storage density of our hard drives far beyond what would be physically possible otherwise.
It really makes you realize that the digital world is not as clean and perfect as we think. We have this image of ones and zeros being these sharp, perfect things, but in reality, at the physical level, it is all messy and noisy.
That is the biggest takeaway. The digital world is an illusion maintained by math. Underneath the surface, your hard drive is struggling to read faint magnetic signals, your Wi-Fi is fighting through walls, and your RAM is getting hit by cosmic rays. The only reason you see a perfect document or a clear video is because these algorithms are working tirelessly in the background to clean up the mess.
It is a bit humbling, actually. Our entire modern civilization is basically resting on the shoulders of these mathematicians from the mid-century who figured out how to make noise meaningful.
It really is. Hamming, Shannon, Reed, Solomon, these are the unsung heroes of the digital age. Without them, the internet would be a garbled mess. We would have no satellite photos of our own planet, and Daniel's QR codes would be useless the moment they got a little dusty.
Well, I think we have given Daniel a lot to think about for his inventory project. If I had to summarize the practical takeaways for him and our listeners, what would they be?
First, understand that ECC is an insurance policy. You pay for it with space and a little bit of processing power, but it saves you from total data loss. Second, when you are dealing with physical media like QR codes or long-term storage, always opt for a higher level of ECC if you can afford the space. It is the difference between a minor inconvenience and a permanent loss.
And third, appreciate the math. Every time you scan a code or watch a streaming video, there is a tiny polynomial solver working for you.
Absolutely. It is a beautiful marriage of abstract theory and practical necessity.
I think that is a great place to wrap up our core discussion. But before we go, I want to look at where this is headed. We have talked about the past and the present, but what is the future of error correction? I am thinking about quantum computing. I have heard that is a whole different ballgame.
Oh, Korn, you are opening a massive door there. Quantum error correction is actually one of the biggest challenges in all of science right now. In a regular computer, a bit is a 0 or a 1. In a quantum computer, you have qubits, which can be both at the same time. But they are incredibly fragile. Just looking at them or a slight change in temperature can cause them to decohere and lose their state.
So, if a cosmic ray is a problem for my RAM, a warm breeze is a disaster for a quantum computer.
Exactly. And the problem is, you cannot just copy a qubit to make a backup because of the no-cloning theorem in quantum mechanics. You cannot use simple redundancy. So scientists are developing things like surface codes, and more recently, neural decoders that use machine learning to predict errors. Just last year in 2025, we saw breakthroughs with things like cat qubits that make error correction 90% more efficient. We are moving from theoretical math to actual hardware that can stay stable long enough to do real work.
So the math is getting even weirder and more counterintuitive.
It has to. As we move into the quantum realm, we are dealing with a whole new kind of noise. But the principle remains the same. Use the structure of the universe, whether it is geometry or entanglement, to protect the integrity of information.
That is fascinating. Maybe we will do a deep dive on quantum error correction in episode 500.
I will start reading the papers now.
Please do. Well, this has been a great journey from Bell Labs to the edge of the solar system and into the heart of a QR code. Thanks to Daniel for sending in such a thoughtful prompt. It really connected well with our previous episode on checksums.
It did. And hey, if you are listening and you have a weird question that pops into your head at an inconvenient moment just like Daniel does, we want to hear from you. You can find us at our website, myweirdprompts.com. There is a contact form there, and you can also find our RSS feed.
And if you are enjoying the show, we would really appreciate it if you could leave a review on Spotify or whatever podcast app you use. It genuinely helps other curious people find the show. We have been doing this for 236 episodes now, and our community of listeners is what keeps us going.
It really does. We love seeing the topics you all are interested in.
Absolutely. Well, that is it for today. Thanks for joining us on My Weird Props. I am Korn.
And I am Herman Poppleberry. We will catch you next time.
Bye, everyone.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.